In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Joining me is Pat Beers, the phenomenal guitarist in the San Diego-based band The Schizophonics. And he plays guitar on the new digital single from my band, The Woggles, called The Witch, which is part of our ongoing project enlisting various guitar player friends of ours. We'll take a listen to some of The Witch now, followed by my interview with Pat on your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Can you see me running?
Hey, this is the Mighty Manfred, and as you know, Halloween is this weekend, and fittingly, Little Steven has chosen a very Halloweeny tune as our coolest song in the world this week. It's from my band, The Woggles, who are on Steven's label, Wicked Cool Records. The song is The Witch. Back in 2019, our longtime guitarist, Jeff Walls, known by his stage name Fleshhammer, passed away, and so starting in 2020, just before the pandemic hit, we started a project recording with a number of our guitarist buddies and pals. The first was Little Steven. And then this past June, we were finally able to get the project started up again. And the first on our list to record with, Pat Beers. And he is my guest today. He plays guitar and fronts the San Diego-based band, The Schizophonics. How are you, Pat?
Good. How are you doing, Manfred? Thanks for having me.
What's that?
Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining me. You're very welcome. Let's see now, the Schizophonics, you guys have been active since like 2009, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, that's when we started. It took us a long time to figure out what we were doing. So we've been making records since like, I think like 2017, or no, we put out a few singles before that. But yeah, it took us a long time to, you know, figure out how to do it.
But well, the lineup includes your wife, Letty. She's the drummer. How did you two meet?
We originally met in high school. She had a Ramones cover band she was starting, and I played bass in it for like a week. And then we didn't see each other for years and years after that. And we eventually met up again and kind of hit it off. And then I convinced her to move out to San Diego with me. And she didn't play drums at all. And when we started the band, and she just, you know, just hopped on the kit one day, and we're like, okay, you're the drummer, you can keep a beat. And so, you know, it took quite a while for us to kind of figure out what we were doing. I didn't really know how to write songs or anything at that time either. So we just played lots and lots of shows, you know, wherever we could, parties or dive bars, and you know, and eventually kind of morphed into what we're doing now.
So did I hear you right? You played drums in this Ramones cover band?
No, I played the bass and she played guitar at the time.
Okay, all right. Okay, she was playing guitar and you were playing bass. That's what you had said that. So there you've got your significant other in the group. What are some of the great things about having your significant other, your wife,
with you when you're out there doing it? Because you mentioned shows. I know you guys play a lot.
Oh, well, you know, you get the brutally honest criticism, of course. You know, that's always good for creating good content. No, I would say, you know, when you're touring, you know, you can get, we're a three piece and we can get a hotel room with two beds, you know, if we have to, and it, you know, works out perfectly. Or no, but I know it's great, you know, just being able to, you know, be with my wife. And, you know, I think it'd be so weird if, you know, one of us had to go on tour for a few months, you know, and, you know, it seems like it'd be really hard to make, you know, make that kind of thing work. So I'm really glad that we get to do it together.
That's very sweet. So where is she right now? Is she working or is she?
She's skating right now. She got really into skateboarding during the pandemic and she's gotten really good. I don't do it myself. I would die, I think. She's at a skate park right now.
Okay, so then I've asked you, what's the great thing about being in a band with your wife? And since she's not there, what's like the worst thing?
I mean, oh, yeah, yeah.
You can just, like, we can just kind of whisper that. You don't have to say it very loud.
Oh, the worst thing. Oh, no, she's probably going to listen to this. So I don't know if I could.
All right. Well, I don't want to put you on the spot. We want to maintain the matrimonial harmony there. Bliss.
Oh, yeah. The drummer is always right in our band, of course.
Well, you know, the drummer in my band would agree with that wholeheartedly, and we're not even married.
I think it's any band, you know. I think it's just a drummer thing.
Well, since 2009, right? That's kind of when you guys first are getting together. You've played worldwide. You've won numerous local music awards there in San Diego. And your live show, I love this, has been described as watching some insane hybrid of Wayne Kramer, James Brown, and the Tasmanian Devil. And so that sounds really exciting. You know, man, people are always using hyperbole to describe things, especially with bands. And just saying that stuff, you know, sometimes it's really not true. Like, you know, you hear this band's supposed to be like the MC5, and you get there and it's like, yeah, they covered an MC5 song, but it really, that's not the MC5. So I want to investigate this a little further. So James Brown, great dancer. He would do a lot of splits even. Are you a good dancer? And do you ever do splits on stage?
I occasionally do. I would not say I'm a James Brown by any means, or I would not compare myself to any of the greats, but those are, you know, those are artists that we were influenced by. And our main thing is just, you know, putting everything we have into the show energy wise. And it's not really something I kind of consciously try to do. I just, for some reason, when start playing music, I just, you know, this is kind of what I do. And I just, you know, we just try to give everything we can to the audience. And but no, I don't think, you know, I think it's definitely hyperbole. I wouldn't compare myself to some.
Well,
of those.
So I mean, I have seen you, but I'm gonna ask you this question, because a lot of these people that are listening haven't. So you do splits on stage.
Yeah.
Right. You do splits on stage. And do you just do like one split on stage? Like, because I've seen other bands where I can't think, this is a group from like Washington, D.C. And I heard about how wild this guy was. And he did a split and it kind of like worked up to the end of the show, rated a split. And everybody was like, oh, he did a split. You know? And you do a lot more than that physically. And it's overwhelming. It's like, oh my God, how is this guy able to do this and keep going? I mean, this is like from the beginning to the end, it's not one split. It's like a lot, you know, a million splits.
Well, that's the goal, is just to make the show like just doing the splits the entire show. You know, I think that's the new version. But I realize that's what people are there to see now. So I'm just going to just stay in that position. It's like a yoga. It's like hot yoga, you know?
Well, that would be fine if you, because James, he wasn't tied to a guitar. And I think this other part of that description, they talk about watching Wayne Kramer, and we're thinking like, to me, there's a MC5 clip that comes to mind where Fred Sonic Smith and Wayne Kramer, I mean,
they're kicking out their legs at one point, they're playing guitar, and then another point they're like bending over backwards. And you're doing that as well. And you're also leaping to the audience, doing somersaults and splits. I mean, and it's just devastating. I mean, as a live, a visual thing, we're going to get to the music here, but as a visual thing, it's, you're right. This energy level is way off the charts. And it's, I mean, it's incredible. It's just really incredible.
Thank you. I mean, we started out, like I was saying, the band took a while to get off the ground. And, you know, I kind of just always, for some reason, had this reaction to music when we play live. But it took a long time for it to get kind of graceful. I mean, the early days, it was just kind of like, you know, me freaking out and flailing around. And I guess it kind of still is, but it just, you know, over time became more and more, more and more legible.
Well, you know, so now the other aspect, of course, is that the music talent has to be there. And when I sent our recording of The Witch that we made with you and sent it over to Little Steven, and I guess, again, I should mention that The Witch is this week's coolest song in the world. So we recorded that, and we also recorded another song with the Flesh Hammer that you wrote about our late guitar player, Jeff Walls, his stage name being Flesh Hammer. And so I sent those recordings over to Steven, and immediately he wrote me back, and he was ecstatic and about both songs, about, you know, and he had no concept of what your live performance is like. I mean, all he heard was the recordings, and he wrote me back and he said, is this a new guitar player? This guy's killer. Is this a new guitar player? And I wrote him back and I said, no, he's got his own thing. And he wrote me back right after that saying, you need to tell him that your thing is now his thing. And so instead, my answer to that was just sending him back a YouTube clip of you performing. And then immediately he wrote back after that saying, yeah, he's got his own thing. And I thought, well, so when did you start playing guitar?
I started when I was like 14. I'm quite a bit older now. I'm 37 now, so I've been playing forever and ever. And just been always just really into Hendrix. That's my main influence. I love just that kind of fuzzed out, just kind of exotic sounding, you know, blues fuzz type guitar playing.
And so when you're playing live, especially, you've got this thing where you have this kind of sustain going on, and you're chording with your left hand on the guitar neck, and your right hand isn't necessarily engaged with the strings all the time. There's some kind of sustain there. And I've heard people, you know, sometimes like, oh, I don't think that guy's really playing the guitar. How's he doing that? What gave you the idea to play like that? Because, you know, again, visually it's incredible, and you've definitely have the chops to play. So what gave you this idea to move around there, and sort of like, it's like one of those things where, you know, to me, the greatest players have this ability to make it seem effortless, but anyone that's applied any effort towards it knows it's not effortless. But you have that sort of magic quality where it just seems like the most natural thing in the world for you is to have this guitar and to be, you know, playing it. Well, when did you figure out this sort of one-handed guitar playing thing?
Well, I've been doing that a long time. The main place I saw it was the Jimi Hendrix thing. I remember seeing the Monterey Pop Festival. I used to watch that constantly. And, I guess one of the most famous videos of him is when he's playing Wild Thing at the end, where he burns his guitar and everything. Yeah. But I think it's the first guitar solo he does. He starts playing, I think he plays Strangers in the Night, the melody to that, when he starts the solo. You know, he probably just came up with it on the spot. You know, he probably heard it that day or something. But he's just doing it with one hand, and he's kind of dancing and just doing this crazy motion. And I just always thought that was the coolest thing in the world. And I mean, there's you know, there's tons of video of Hendrix doing that kind of stuff where, you know, he's kind of dancing and just playing with his left hand. He's not even picking with his right hand. That was kind of the main place I saw that. And it's not like I consciously said, okay, I'm going to try to do that and make that part of it. I would just start doing that during shows. And I kind of found I had more freedom to move around. And then eventually I kind of stopped using a pick live. And I would just kind of just, you know, strum with my fingers instead of pick. And it kind of freed me up to move around a bit more. And it's just kind of a gradual thing that happened over years and years.
Do you recall how we first met?
You know, I remember seeing you at the Till 2 Club. That was the first time I remember seeing the Woggles. And I mean, that kind of gets into, you know, why we did that Flesh Hammer song about Jeff was, you know, the first time we saw you guys, you know, not to make you too embarrassed here, but that was a big moment for our band, you know, seeing you guys play and, you know, learning how to put together a live show and, you know, command an audience and stuff like that. That kind of blew our minds. And, you know, and I never, you know, I never was really close to Jeff, but, you know, it was such a big influence on our band. And, you know, it's kind of why we did that, wrote that song about him after he passed away.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that. And for those that don't know, the last show that we played, the Woggles with Jeff, was in San Diego, and it was with you guys as well as the LA band, the 210s.
Mm-hmm.
So the Flesh Hammer song, we hope to have that out as a single next year, but right now is a digital release, and our coolest song in the world of the week this week is The Witch. And that song was done first by a German band back in 1970, The Rattles. It was actually was a top 10 hit in the UK and a hit in Europe, and it was a minor hit on this side of the Atlantic. So when I sent you the versions of the song, what was your reaction to it initially when you heard The Witch, those other versions?
No, I loved it. I couldn't believe I hadn't heard that before. It was such a cool song. And what was the other version? Another band did it too.
Right. So there was also a version from a New York-based band, upstate New York, from around the same time. They used it as a B-side, Wool, like W-O-O-L.
Yeah. That one had a really cool, bit more like rock vibe to it. But the original one by the Rattles is just such a trip. It kind of gave me a Blue Cheer, but a bit more... I don't know, just kind of weird. There's if anyone looks up The Rattles, The Witch, there's a great video they made for it back in the 60s as well, or early 70s. They're like in the woods, and the woman who sings it is really striking looking. She's almost like witch-like.
Yes.
Yeah, she's a trip.
So speaking of The Witch, Halloween, right? And I know that Halloween's got some resonance with the Schizophonics. I believe you guys are playing on the 31st, this coming Sunday, at the Casbah in San Diego. And your most recent album, People in the Sky, came out Halloween back in 2019 on Pig Baby Records. What were your Halloweens like growing up as a kid? Did your mom make outfits, or did you have like a store-bought outfit, or did you even celebrate Halloween as a kid?
No, yeah, I just talked to her yesterday, and she said she just found this she said, because I was telling her about my outfit this year, which requires a cape. And she's like, oh, I just found your cape I made you when you were a kid. I can't remember what it was for, but I found your cape. but the Halloween was a big deal for me growing up. That's kind of where I think I first got into almost like putting together shows like I like to do now, because we used to do these really elaborate haunted houses with all the other neighbor kids growing up. And they were just, you know, I would spend the entire month of October making these haunted houses. And, you know, it'd be just like now, like putting a show together, a band together, you know, where I just stress out about it and drive everyone else crazy and claim, you guys aren't into it as I am. But
and, wait a minute, let me make sure I'm understanding. So it's not that you were going to, and maybe you were going to local haunted houses, but you and the gang, that like our gang, the Little Rascals, decided exactly. we're going to make a haunted house and have other kids come. Is that
exactly. right? Exactly. That was it. And yeah, it was very much like, it was like me and the, our neighborhood kids, and we would make these haunted houses, and they became kind of a thing for the neighborhood to go through them. And they were almost like kind of scared. They were probably very scared for the adults because they were so, you know, we built like, you know, makeshift bridges they had to walk over. And it was all made by kids that didn't know what they were doing. And, you know, so like, I don't know. They were pretty legendary though. I remember there was one kid that we used to just completely bury in dirt every time we had a group go through, and he was completely, you know, we just covered him in dirt and completely buried except for maybe like a little hole or straw, and he would burst out of it. But yeah, Halloween is my favorite thing in the world. And I was so bummed out last year during COVID that there was no Halloween and there'd be no parties yeah. or trick-or-treaters or anything. So I realized, okay, there's not going to be Halloween this year. So I need to like get my Halloween out somehow. So almost the entire month, I only listened to Halloween music and only watched horror movies for like every day of the month, just so I could get it out of my system, you know? So after it passed, I was like, okay, I felt like I got my, I'm done with Halloween for a while.
Well, you mentioned you spoke to your mom and, you know, what'd you say about finding, about your, somehow about talking about it, what you might be wearing this Halloween. And that's when she mentioned she found the cave. What are you wearing for Halloween? Can you tell us?
I think I'm going to be Evel Knievel this year, but I can't tell you what Letty's costume is. She's kind of a secret, but.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, Letty being the drummer.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Thus I need the cape. I think I need the, to be Evel Knievel. You got to have the,
cane, right?
Yeah. The cane, right? Didn't he like beat a guy with a cane?
I wouldn't be surprised if he was a regular William Zanzinger, you know,
I think he was, I think there was some kind of, someone wrote an article about him and he showed up to his house and beat him with his lucky cane. And then of course
he distributed some justice. He met out some justice there.
Could you imagine Evel Knievel in today's world? Like every time someone says something online, he's at your doorstep.
Man, that would be terrible. That would be terrible. Although, you know,
I think it'd be kind of great.
Yeah, he would. Yeah, that's keeping the daredevilness wherever he is. So you play on Halloween, but then this is like a kickoff thing for a bunch of other dates coming up, right? You guys are heading back out on the road after Halloween.
Yeah, so that's actually the first of, I think, 20 dates in a row with a couple days off in between. But we're going to kind of hit the West Coast. We're going to be playing the next day is Vegas. Next day after that will be Phoenix. And just so on. We're going to let's see what else we have. We're playing Bisbee for the first time ever. That'll be fun. We're playing Bisbee, Arizona, which okay. I've never, I don't think I've even been to Bisbee before, although we're from Arizona. And then Albuquerque, Denver, Salt Lake, where else? We're playing Seattle, San Fran, LA as well.
Are you going up into Canada, into Vancouver or not?
No, we're not going to Canada on this trip, but we're going to be playing, God, I wish I had the name of it offhand. We're playing a festival in Canada next year.
So you're heading out on the road, 20 shows in a row. I guess people can find out your tour routing, just like, is it the schizophonics.com?
Yeah, I would check out the Facebook or the Instagram. We have all the dates right there. They're all first thing when you click on it. And I should update the website after.
Yeah, well, that's okay. So we're going to take a listen to a track off your 2019 album, People in the Sky, in a moment. Ties back to to Halloween. But first, I want to ask you about a new album, because I thought that you guys have got one in the can, right?
Yeah, yeah. We just got the test pressing and all the artwork done, and it's all sent off. But I think with the pressing plants being kind of backed up, it probably won't be out until about March. So it's done, but we're just kind of waiting for it to come back right now.
And when you say March, we're talking about 2022.
Yeah. It's like the turnaround now is crazy. We recorded it in, you know, this last February, but it takes quite a while to get a record made right now. So,
yeah. So when you say you recorded it last February, we're talking about February of this year?
Yeah, this year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so that wasn't as, was it you were all masked up or was that done remotely or?
Yeah, you know, Letty was vaccinated at that point. She had volunteered to help people get vaccinated, but I wasn't. And it was kind of during, you know, what height of COVID. So we did it. It was kind of weird. It was just me and Letty. And the engineer, was kind of in the control booth most of the time. And we were masked up when we were around him. And it was kind of a weird way to do a record, but everything on the record is just me and Letty. And the engineer would help with backing vocals and everything. And but I ended up playing bass on it. And we just did it, the two of us.
And what's it? Do you have a title for the upcoming album?
Yeah, it's called Hoof It.
Hoof It?
Yeah.
Well, now we're going to take a listen in a moment to a track off of your last album, People in the Sky. And talking about Halloween this weekend. And so the tune is called Like a Mummy. And the mummy like Dracula and Frankenstein, the Wolfman, Creature from the Black Lagoon, films no doubt that you were watching around last Halloween. The mummy is a universal monster, at least when Boris Karloff did it. Now, your mummy and the song seems to be of a happier sort. Tell me about Like a Mummy. What inspired you to come up with Like a Mummy?
Oh, I think that's kind of a Letty thing. She's obsessed with Egypt, anything Egyptian. And I don't know how that song came about, but it was just kind of a goofy throwaway party song. Sorry, Beanie's jumping up on me. And we just thought it'd be a kind of a fun thing. Wait, what is your favorite Universal monster, Manfred? I have to know.
Oh, well, that's great that you ask. In fact, a typical question for me to ask people, and I'm going to tell you in a moment. Typical question for me to ask people is those Aurora monster models. There was the Dracula and the Wolfman and the Mummy. Did you see those when you were growing up as a kid? Was that a thing? Making models for a certain generation. I'm talking to folks. Those were like all the typical monster models, you know. But it's like a toss up between. Well, the Wolfman and the Mummy don't rank as high out of those five to me. You know, I enjoy them all, but it's up at the top. It's like, you know, it's Dracula and Frankenstein. And then it's like weird. It's like the Creature from the Black Lagoon. Sometimes he swims up to the top of the heap and other times he recedes, you know. But those would be the triumvirate there for me. And yourself?
Well, I think. As far as the movies go, I think the Wolfman is the one I could watch like every year. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know about some of the other ones. I think the Wolfman and the Bride of Frankenstein are the two movies I could watch over and over. And I don't know, the Mummy itself as the film, as the classic movie is probably not my least favorite of the movies to watch, but
I agree with that.
Watch that Wolfman movie like once a month. I think it's so good.
That's very cool. Well, we're going to have to get together and have a little film festival at y'all's place there in San Diego sometime.
We should.
Yeah. Well, Pat, before we hear Like a Mummy, I need to thank you one more time for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're certainly welcome, man. Right now, it's the Schizophonics with Like a Mummy off their Pig Baby Records release, People in the Sky, here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Whoa, where are we, honey?
Where is your man?
You better love me like a mummy.
Whoa, way back.
with Like a Mummy. That's the Schizophonics here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to their guitarist and frontman, Pat Beers, for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Next time, my guest will be the legendary Dion, and we'll discuss his brand new album, Stomping Ground. That's your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.